This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Beat me up on the mamas of all mama shit.
Hey, I'm looking through my telescope and I see a mothership. Is that you? Beam me up.
Hey, D.A., I'm thirsty, man. Can you beam me up for a cold one?
Hey, D.A., what's going on, baby? Stop me off and beam me up.
D.A., what's the silly? Oh, permission to get in that mothership.
Is my window seat still available? Beam me up.
What's going on, D.A.? Hey, man, I need you to do me a huge favor. My coworker's a jerk. So just beam me up, man. Get beamed up. Everyone else has. It's DA on CBS Sports Radio.
And we come to you live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios. O'Reilly Auto parts, better prices every day. Thanks for being with us, everybody. A little reminder that when we move time slots starting on Monday to 9 to noon Eastern time here on CBS Sports Radio, you can follow us and the show and everything that happens on the show many, many ways. You can always listen to everything. Full episodes are podcastable. Full episodes are on iTunes, minus commercial interruption. It's DA on demand, so we'll do that the same exact way as soon as we are off of the air, as soon as we sign off. We'll publish and post the show in its entirety on iTunes and on our website, daoncbs.com. Also, we'll have the web stream going so you can watch the show every single day on your computer, and we'll always be streamable using your phone, your apps, or at cbssportsradio.com. This week, there's been a lot of news and a lot of headlines surrounding a new book by Marcus Thompson, sports columnist with the Bay Area News Group, called Golden, The Miraculous Rise of Steph Curry. And people have kind of gone gaga, started debating this about why or if it's okay or if it's legit that LeBron, Russell Westbrook, and maybe others resent the success and the popularity of Steph Curry. Joining us here on the show is Marcus Thompson, who just joined us actually a couple of weeks ago to discuss the relocation of the Raiders from Oakland to Las Vegas. And he joins us now. Marcus, how you doing?
I'm back, baby. Thanks for having me.
My pleasure, man. You're back. And you made a lot of news the last couple of days with this book. And I wonder, do you feel like anybody has taken your stuff out of context and tried to create friction and a rivalry between LeBron and Russ and Steph that wasn't there? Do you think that the coverage has been relatively fair and even-handed in what you have said?
No, I think it's been fair. Look, the rivalry is already there, right? They go against each other. The evidence is there. I spent a lot of time on this book and doing a lot of research and talking to a lot of people. So I know they may not like it, but, you know, it's been fine to me. They keep talking about it. I'm waiting for this go on to June for all I'm concerned, as long as it helps book sales.
Yeah, no, I hear you. I just know that in today's sports culture, we take one little word like disdain between, you know, LeBron and Steph.
Oh, well, yeah, and then
And then we just kind of blow it up and whip it around, and we debate it all day, and we say, oh, my God, why would they hate it and all of this? So in that way, do you ever think that that kind of piece of the conversation is overblown when it comes to the quote-unquote rivalry?
Well, first off, it's not presented in the book like that. In the book, it just talks about it lists the instances and, you know, some examples of this kind of mindset, but it's really more leaning towards former players because they were really vocal in their criticisms. But I think it does include, that was my personal, I think it does include LeBron, Chris Paul, Russell Westbrook. When they asked me to name some, I named some, but it's not like, hey, this book is saying LeBron hates him. I mean, it's not technically like that, but you know, that's how the business is, right? You got to get the headlines good.
if you could read through what all of the old guys have said to you about Steph Curry, what's the reason? What's the biggest reason that they resent his success and his popularity?
It's just, it seems like it's just more than what other, like, really great players have gotten. I think that's the sense I get. I think in the end they do think Steph is really good, but it's like when you start seeing, you know, some of these players who've been great and who've done great things, and they probably had to overcome more. They probably had to prove themselves more. So they see this as pretty sudden for Steph. It's like in 2014, he was just a good player. 2015, he's the face of basketball and a unanimous MVP. I think that's how they see it. So they're like, well, so he's better than all of these other players who, you know, who they think are better but somehow didn't get that credibility. I think that's the general consensus. It's the, you know, the typical professional athlete comparing. You know, that's what a lot of them do. They look at each other's salaries and stardom and endorsements, and, you know, they determine who's worthy of what.
Marcus Thompson, author of Golden, The Rise of Steph Curry, joining us here on the show. Is it also the style of Steph that it's kind of a, you know, it's the three-point laden finesse style, and it's not what the old school basketball players feel like they went through or they played like?
I mean, you know, I see that, right, and I hear that argument. I don't think there's some issues I have with it. So did Larry Bird, was he not finesse? Was he not, you know, he was a shooter. He's a great passer. He wasn't down there fighting, you know, he wasn't like brutally pounding dudes and backing you down. Like, not every great player from the 90s relied on that. But I do feel like they don't think his style is as legitimate as theirs. You know, yeah. It's like, hey, he's doing this because of the rules or because of the three-pointer, and that, you know, that's like almost like a cheat code. I think their mindset is if he was playing in our time, he had to play according to our game, he wouldn't survive. But it's just not a consistent argument across the board. I mean, Mark Price is a pretty similar player to Steph Curry. He's not as flashy, and he didn't do as much off the dribble, but his game was a lot like Steph Curry's, but nobody says Mark Price wasn't worthy.
That's a good point. I wonder also if it's that they look at him as privileged because his father played in the NBA. There's the pictures of him as a playing around the court. You know, we hear that he's a suburb kid. He's not a city kid, that him and Clay are suburb kids. Is there that piece of it that he kind of just looks like he's 12 years old and he just shoots threes all the time, and that there's kind of a lack of respect because they don't think that he's, I guess, really tough or didn't come from their background or something?
You know, I mentioned that in the book. I list a few reasons for what I think it is, and just like talking to a lot of players, what their response seems to be about. That's definitely one of them. I think the issue is much more about like credibility than like respect, so to speak. I think when you grind from the hood and you come from nothing, and you're 6'5" and you look athletic, right? There's an inherent credibility you get with that. You know, like if you were playing hoop and some dude walk on the court and he's 6'5" and he's in great shape and he's got all nice shoes, you might automatically think, man, he can play some hoop, right?
Right.
And then if he can't play, you're like, wow, he sucks. I thought he was going to be good. So I think Steph doesn't get the inherent credibility. They don't think he's tough because he's from privilege, right? They don't think he's good enough because he's not like size. He doesn't have the size or athleticism. So they're not just going to give it to him off the superficial stuff, off the appearance. And he has to earn it. And I think, like, you know, that he blew up and he's got like 9-year-olds across the country and moms loving him and people just worshiping him. I think that bothers him because he doesn't have that inherent credibility. LeBron had it from jump. Like day one, like he had it. So I just think, I think the answer is it just needs more time. If Steph does this for 5 or 6 years and kind of get rid of some of the, man, he's just a flash in the pan. Once he gets that out of the window, then I think they'll say, all right, Steph, welcome to the elite club.
Marcus Thompson, author of Golden, The Miraculous Rise of Steph Curry, joins us here on the show. I also wonder who the real Steph Curry is, because he always seems to say the right things in press conferences. He looks like the guy that, you know, your son brings home from school and they want to play basketball with. And, you know, the buddy that you have over for dinner, he says he's polite, he's handsome, he says all the right things, he's all these great things. Then there's also the piece of him that likes to taunt on the floor, that trash talks before the ball's even in the hoop, that throws his mouth guard, that shimmies and shakes and rubs it in. And I wonder, what is the real Steph Curry? Which one of that is more real to what you think his DNA is? Marcus Thompson joining us here from the Bay Area News Group. Let's get him back on the line because I think that he dropped there. You know, Steph Curry's always kind of been this fascinating piece of the NBA fabric, because as Marcus was just saying, he doesn't fit the prototypical NBA star. He didn't come from a hard scrabble life. He didn't come from the streets. He didn't come from nothing. And that's been so many of the stories in the NBA. So Marcus joins us now. And Marcus, what I was saying was, you know, you have this polite guy that seems to say all the right things and has the adorable daughter and comes from a great family. And then you have the Steph Curry that trash talks and rubs it in when he's up and starts trash talking before the ball's even in the hoop and, you know, throws his mouth guard and all of this. Which part of Steph Curry do you think is the real Steph Curry?
Well, first and foremost, like, I explain this in the book, like, there's a dichotomy to him. So there is two sides. Like, let's let that be clear. There is, you know, the Steph Curry off the court, and then there's this different beast on the court. I think you know, if you take the totality of his life, it's the nice guy. He's a really good guy. He's a family dude. Like, there's nobody who meets and knows Steph Curry who doesn't like him. On the court, though, he's a different dude. And in many ways, he has to be, right? This is how he copes, right? This is how he overcomes all of these knocks that are against him. And this has been happening since he was a little boy, back when his jersey looked like a dress on him. Like, people have doubted him from day one. When you look at him, this dude can't play. So I think that's his coping mechanism. That's how he gets over it. And also, I think, you know, he watched NBA basketball at a time where that stuff was popular. So I think in his mind, and like the Warriors' mind, Steph doesn't do more than anybody else. Everybody celebrates threes. Everybody throws up stuff. And, you know, many people throw tantrums. Like, Draymond, he leads the league of techs, and he's right next to him. So there's nothing, like, extra about his behavior. It's just that when you look at him, it doesn't match up to the guy off the court. I just think when he's on the court, he flips a switch to be a guy, because he is like a David amongst Goliath. And that's how he handles it. Like, all right, you guys won't give me my respect, I'm about to dominate you and take my respect from you.
Finally, when it comes to this rivalry with LeBron, what is it specifically that you think LeBron resents about Steph? Is it the trash talking? Is it the instant success overnight? Is it because he's so popular? Is it simply because he's a rival? What is it that LeBron dislikes most?
I think LeBron does like Steph Curry the person. Right, I think that's there, and I think after this whole rivalry is over, like, LeBron will probably embrace him, because I think LeBron is a good guy. I think the problem was Steph, in the minds of many, including the NBA, like, knocked LeBron off the podium. I think Steph represented this statement that LeBron is done, or LeBron is no longer the best. Kobe steps out. LeBron is clearly the number one. And then, boom, here comes Curry being anointed. And I think if it was anybody, right, he probably would have had a problem with that and would have wanted to take that player out. But also, that is like, that dude, the dude who was in my camp, right? Are you serious right now?
Yeah.
Let me show you how overrated he is. Let me show you how he's not ready. He's not on my level. So I think that's what it was about. We were ready to push LeBron off the pedestal, take his crown off of him and put it on Steph. And I think that's where he's like, wait a second, let me show you guys why that's a bad idea.
Marcus Thompson, the book is Golden, The Miraculous Rise of Steph Curry. It's available everywhere right now, including Amazon, online. You can get it anywhere that you usually get your books, Barnes & Noble, etc. Marcus, it's great to catch up. You can follow Marcus on Twitter at ThompsonScribe. Thanks, buddy. Best of luck with the book, man.
All right. I appreciate it. I'll be back.
Okay. Marcus Thompson calling his shot here on the show. When we return, Tony Romo and the embarrassing spectacle that was last night. DA, CBS Sports Radio.
When you hear the Zap Zap, you're on board.
First off, permission to board the mothership.
Granted.
Please.
DA on CBS Sports Radio.
How old are your smoke alarms? Replaced today with Kidde's worry-free alarms. Get 10 years of power and no low battery chirps. Kidde, technology that saves lives. Glad you're with us on a fine Wednesday. DA with you here on CBS Sports Radio. I thought last night's Tony Romo nonsense was just that, nonsense. I thought it was silly. I mean, to me, Tony Romo getting a jersey and basically sitting at the end of the bench and then being called up and Rick Carlisle putting his arm around him like he's going in the ball game was ridiculous. I think it's just totally ridiculous. I mean, even him shooting jumpers is kind of ridiculous, but okay, you're a guest of the Mavs. The jersey on, I thought was silly, but then to introduce him with the starting lineup.
And that guard in his first season from Eastern Illinois.
It just felt like Eddie Goodell. It just felt like the St. Louis Browns putting a guy up there that stood 3'9" and having him take four balls. It just seemed so cheesy. Did anybody else feel this way? I mean, if I'm Romo, I'm like, look, it'd be great to have a Tony Romo night where I can sit behind the bench. I could be in a suit. You can show me on the Jumbotron. That's cool. I'll feel the love. That'd be great. I don't necessarily think I would need to shoot jumpers. I'm freaking Tony Romo. I've played in the NFL for 10 years. Do I need to shoot jumpers before a meaningless end of the season game? Okay. Do I need to be introduced with the team? This seems really overboard. And the most incredible part was that Mark Cuban wanted him signed. He wanted him to play. And Adam Silver was like, no. No. I mean, could you imagine being Dirk Nowitzki at this point? Future Hall of Famer, the greatest international player we've ever seen, one of the greatest players of this generation. He's holding on for dear life. Dear life. Just wants one last crack at the playoffs. Doesn't even need to be a good team. Just get me to the playoffs. And he's got Tony Romo shooting jumpers with him and getting introduced with the starting lineup? I mean, Dirk has got to be like, yeah, okay, great. Like, could you imagine for a second the Spurs doing this? I mean, there's as many Cowboys fans in San Antonio as there is any other fans. You think Popovich? You think the Spurs would be like, yeah, in Tim Duncan's final season, we'd like Tony Romo to come off the bench for a game. I mean, come on. This is so minor league. I like Mark Cuban because Mark Cuban pushes the boundaries of traditional behavior, and we get caught too often in just doing something the way that it's always been done. You know, I'm getting this pushback on the Chief Wahoo logo. It's like, I don't know what you need to see. It's a bad, stereotypical Native American from 100 years ago. Like, I don't know what else you have to see. An oversized nose, deep red face, goofy grin. Not exactly the most glorified portrait of a Native American. So yes, Chief Wahoo should be modernized and or eliminated. People are like, it's always been that way. Why would we change it now? People are so sensitive. You're like, okay, well, things do change. We're not allowed to use the word colored anymore either. Why did we ever have to change that? Do we still use the word Negro? No. Why would we ever change that? It's always been that way. It's like, well, things change. You know, that's life. So I like that Mark Cuban is willing to challenge some of that conventional thought. But Mark Cuban also is really cheesy. You know, his taste is really cheesy. Mark Cuban is not the most refined individual. And I'm not saying you got to be refined. I mean, look, you're talking to a bunch of guys in this show that like to sit around and drink beers and eat bad food. So it's not exactly like we're the most refined. I mean, Mraz is wearing a hockey jersey right now. But I am saying that last night was not cool. It was cheesy. And Mark Cuban kind of sometimes doesn't know this. He's a great business guy. But like, did you know? This always stood out to me. Mark Cuban wants to wear Maverick stuff, right? He wants to wear Mav stuff. Fine. You're an owner. You want to wear Mav stuff. Every piece of Mavs clothing that Mark Cuban has worn to a game has been like the cheesiest thing you can find in the gift shop, in the team store. If I walked into a team store right now, into the Dallas Mavericks team store, or I went on to Fanatics.com or whatever, or NBA shop online, I could find 10 things that are cool that have Mavs stuff on them. He has found the 25 things that are totally cheesy that I would never wear. Like, remember when he wore the Mavericks hockey jersey? That was hideous. Hideous. He's always wearing something that's like, the logo's way too big. It's like oversized and frumpy and garish and dumb. It's like he can't just find the subtle t-shirt that's got like the trendy faded Mavericks logo on it. He's got to find like the most obnoxious, the grossest thing. So I just think that Mark Cuban's taste is terrible in a lot of ways. And last night was him wearing the Mavericks hockey jersey. That's what last night was. Tony Romo being introduced with the team. It's fine to have a Tony Romo night. It's stupid and cheesy to have him shooting jumpers in a jersey. It just is. And sometimes, you know, you go, well, what's taste and what's cheesy? And that's all subjective. And I would just say, it's like the Supreme Court's definition of hardcore pornography. I'll know it when I see it. Last night was cheesy. It crossed the line. It was stupid. And that's all that needs to be said about that. 855-212-4CBS. 855-212-4227. Twitter, DA on CBS. We'll jump back to your phone calls and bring you a sound check coming up here next. Your best audio of the day, including our favorite baseball broadcast team, at it again with their newest complaint. You know, Susan. DA, CBS Sports Radio.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
If you're a D-alien, then welcome aboard.
I don't know if you can make any sense out of that play. It was a play. Headley broke. Well, he broke.
D-A on CBS Sports Radio.
But did he break, John? 39 minutes past the hour. If you listen to Apple Music for your music, check it out. CBS Sports Radio is on there now as well. On Apple Music, simply search CBS Sports Radio, and you'll get the full network on a beautiful stream. Love it. Live it. My man BRCG's next up in Topeka, listening on 1490 to CBS Sports Radio. What's up, BRCG?
Hey, good evening, my man. Can I be a beamed up?
You know it.
I'd just like to call on this last week. You know, I'd like to call you George Jefferson. I told you, you're moving up. You're moving up to the day slot.
Appreciate it.
I'd like to be called Leon, I guess. But I will ask a couple questions.
Yeah.
Number one, are y'all taking everything with you, trash Tuesday and all that? Or are you having to rewrite the show? Is it?
Nope.
Is it anything you're having?
Everything is coming with. Everything.
Cool.
I might add a few things to it, but everything that you hear on this show is coming with.
Well, you know, I got something to say, too, about that. I kind of get a little bit, you know how in Kansas, you know, out in the Midwest, you can kind of see the storms coming from long ways away?
Yeah.
Is something happening with Bart? Is he going to come more often? Are you losing him because you're going to the day slot or what? And if he's listening, you know, people looking out for my man, Bartholomew. What's going on with him?
That's a great question. It's only that it's the off season, and so that's why we haven't had Bart here, obviously. He was just doing the football season. I want him.
When you switch time slots.
No, I want him on our slot. I want him to do our show when the football season rolls around again. So that's what I'm going to push for.
It's just I don't know if he was asleep or not, but, you know, during the football season, he was usually on some cameos during the daytime on a couple of shows.
Oh, you know that he's going to have some role with us. I want him in studio with us every week, just like we had on this show.
We're going to have night in the day. You know?
Exactly. Exactly.
We need him in the day. But, you know, like I say, everybody, y'all keep tuning in on Monday, but I will say this. I missed Trash Tuesday yesterday. I hate to break for y'all, but I'm going to trash the Girl Scouts for writing that nonsense on the side of the box. The Girl Scouts don't do anything but try to figure out where they want to send these girls and then go out there and make them sit in front of Walmart in all this weather and sell cookies. That's not the thing that's on the side of the box, man.
Okay.
Not what's on the side of the box. I'll holler at y'all next week. See you then.
Taking out the trash.
A late Trash Tuesday. Rarely do the Girl Scouts get trashed. We just had a box of the Girl Scout cookies in here. Ack brought one in.
Yeah, delicious. My only question to BRCG is, Girl Scout cookies are so delicious that who takes the time to read the side of the box? I just rip those bad boys open and throw them down the gullet.
We had the s'mores in here, is that right?
Yeah, the new one this year, the rookie, having their rookie campaign in the Girl Scout season. Excellent.
Pretty good.
Really, really good. Almost like a Vienna finger, but you've now made everything graham cracker, marshmallow, and chocolate. It's same shape, though.
Yeah, so now is the Girl Scout cookie season. This is when it usually happens, the calendar?
It's actually dying down now. It's usually March to the end of April, so we're at like the back end of it. So, you know, if you're really lucky and you got a good hook, you'll get them beginning of March, usually about mid-March. And then, like he's saying, you'll see a lot of these girls now outside of Walmart or your local supermarket because inevitably, you know, the Girl Scouts order a ton extra cookies than they've sold, and they go out and they try to sell them outside the supermarkets, which, you know, I get it. You're trying to make an extra buck. They're almost like ticket scalpers with cookies.
Yeah.
Before you go in there and buy those Oreos, why don't you stay here and buy some Thin Mints?
But I would rather have Thin Mints than anything that's inside that supermarket.
Of course, but very marked up. It's not like you can get a 2-for-5 deal. Usually, I think the standard's $4 or $5 for a Girl Scout cookie. And I believe the amount of cookies you get per box has really gone down on a lot of them. Like the peanut butter patties or tagalongs, they've really, really pumped the brakes. I think I get 12 cookies per box where I was getting 20 at one point in my life.
That's not true with the last thing, the s'mores box that we had in here. That was way more than 12 cookies.
Way more than 12, but still, if you notice, it's really only two rows where they could figure out a way to fit three rows in there. I'm telling you, for the bang for your buck, they've really gone light on us, and I don't appreciate that.
Interesting. If you've got any thoughts on this year's Girl Scout cookies, I am soliciting phone calls on that. I need some intel on this because I haven't gotten mine, and it sounds like I'm going to have to try to be scraping the bottom of the barrel going outside a few grocery stores, the Piggly Wigglies around here, to go get mine.
Yeah, it's get in or get out now. You're going to have to wait till March next year.
This is bad. So it's like, you know, free agency is already hit, and I still have no quarterback.
You're Jonathan Hankins on the market right now. Can the Colts visit with me?
So this is bad. Are we getting less Girl Scout cookies? And are they marking up the price on us now? These are important questions.
There was a point in time there was $3 a box. I think I paid $5 a box this year. So I don't think it's, you know, my aunt, you know, going crazy and marking me up on purpose. I think the Girl Scouts are out for blood now.
They're out for blood.
I don't know what's going on.
When I played Little League Baseball, we had to sell chocolate bars. We had a box. Everybody had a box of chocolate bars. And they were generic chocolate bars. They weren't even very good. So there was a box that you could get that was just plain chocolate bars, kind of like Hershey's. And then there was a box of peanuts inside the milk chocolate. So I had these two boxes. And they kind of look like a Crave case from White Castle. So bring them home. Got to raise money for the Little League team. And which is so funny because all of our Little League teams in my hometown were also sponsored by like an auto garage, an auto body shop, a restaurant, a diner. So clearly that to get the sponsorship on the jersey didn't do enough.
No, I think the chocolate bars are for the coaches' card games.
You know, it's like now the NBA is going to have advertisements on their jerseys. That pays for everything. In our day, it was like $50 you can get in there. So I brought it home and I was like, yeah, I got the chocolate bars here, and there had to be 50 bars to a box. And my dad's like, oh, how many you got in there? I'm like, I don't know. I think I sold like 3 today. I got like 47 left in this and like 45 in this. He goes, all right, how much money do we have? Okay, all right, I'll take both boxes. I'm like, Dad, you want both boxes? He's like, yeah, put them in the freezer, and every night for the rest of the year just pounded those chocolate bars. Papa Amendo would just go to town on the Little League chocolate bars.
But it's a great loophole.
That was dessert every day. Loved them.
Loved them. And not only that, your mother, his wife, couldn't tell him not to have them because he bought them for a good cause to support the son.
Yeah, and Mama
Amendo. It's the ultimate fat guy move.
Mama Amendo did not appreciate that. She's like, well, we have 100 chocolate bars in the freezer just for you to pig out on forever. 855-212-4CBS. 855-212-4227. Twitter, DA on CBS. It is time for your sound check.
Yeah, is this thing on? Hello?
Sound. Audio vibrations transmitted through the airwaves. And sometimes it's epic.
This quarterback, wait, now he's a thing of beauty on throwing a football.
A stiff neck? I got a stiff neck 24 hours a day, every day of my life.
An educated person can't think he's going to get a recruit by strippers coming in.
Remember I told you that. They can't eat you. They can fire you, but they can't eat you.
And they run through our ass like through a tin horn, man, and we could not stop them. Could not stop them.
The day's best audio. It's DA's sound check.
Let's start with Mets manager Terry Collins, who's looking for the real Jose Reyes.
I got the FBI out looking for the real Jose Reyes right now. So. He's being kidnapped. He's being held someplace. I know that.
Yeah, the real Jose Reyes might be the one you have in your clubhouse here, TC. That real Jose Reyes is now 33 years old. He had a game that was built on speed, agility, athleticism, and he doesn't have that anymore. And I thought that last year he had given way more to the team than they even thought was possible. And now to plug him in this year, 33 years old, and just kind of assume he'll be 34 midway through the season, just kind of assume he's going to pick up where he left off. He's batting 0-59 this year. 0-59 on the young season. With a .086 on-base percentage. I mean, it's a disgrace. He has two hits in 29 at-bats. You can put out the FBI. You can put out the APB. Sorry, I don't think you're finding the real Jose Reyes anywhere else besides the one you got. CBS Sports Network draft analyst Corey Chavis, who of course played in the NFL as well, joined Gio and Jones this morning. Got Leonard Fournette, Christian McCaffrey, Dalvin Cook. Yeah, Chavis thinks that Joe Mixon is the best.
I think he's the top back in the draft. He's actually like a little bit like a Matt Forte in terms of him coming out of Tulane. People forget when Forte came out of Tulane, he was a 4-4 guy. And he could catch the football outstanding in that aspect. Receiver-like skills, a little bit taller. Very built, pretty similar. They have some similarities, except I think Mixon's that actually maybe even a slightly more explosive than Forte was.
Yeah, but here's the thing. If Joe Mixon is Matt Forte, he's not the best back in the draft. Because I guarantee you, either Leonard Fournette, Dalvin Cook, or Christian McCaffrey will be better than Matt Forte. Matt Forte had a very good career. But Matt Forte, if Leonard Fournette's not better than what Matt Forte ended up being, he's a huge bust. If Dalvin Cook and Christian McCaffrey aren't better than Matt Forte, I mean, come on. Like, that would be fine. Matt Forte, again, was a good back, 1,000-yard guy, could catch out of the backfield, but he wasn't Adrian Peterson. And I think Leonard Fournette has the expectations that he's going to be Adrian Peterson. And if he's not, and it's Dalvin Cook or it's Christian McCaffrey, if you told the team that is drafting either one of those guys, okay, you're getting Matt Forte, where would you draft him then? Would you draft Christian McCaffrey in the top 10 if he's Matt Forte? Probably not, because you can find running backs in a lot of places in the draft. You're looking for a guy that's a game changer instantly and has to be game planned against. And again, Forte had a good career, but you would probably take Forte knowing everything that you had after the midway point, after number 15, after number 16 in the first round, maybe in the 20s. I mean, so I just can't see that Joe Mixon is the best back in this draft, especially if he's the next Matt Forte. And finally, our favorite broadcasting duo in baseball, the Yankees booth, John Sterling and Susan Waldman, talking about the news item that hit this week that in Seattle's Safeco Ballpark, they are selling grasshoppers to eat.
Did you see I was watching some of the highlights or Seattle game, and Jay Buhner was in the booth with our buddy Dave Sims, and he was eating roasted grasshoppers, which is now they're selling them in the...
Is that right?
Yeah, Safeco. I don't think we'll try that. Jack will try that, though.
1-2.
No.
Fouled off. It sounds, you know, first you think, ew. But we do eat snails.
Yeah, we do, but we don't eat the whole snail. We eat the inside of the snail. I don't know. It just sounds icky to me. He said, not bad. Very crunchy. Has a little kick to it.
But Jay Buhner's a little different anyway. The 1-2 is low.
Grasshopper, have a little kick.
He's an awfully nice guy, but, you know, you figure he might do something like that. I had not thought about heating grasshopper. How do they cook?
I have no idea. I didn't ask. I just was horrified at the whole thought.
Oh, my God. I mean, this is where we need the webcast, because when we play John and Susan stuff, you need to see my reaction as I'm hearing it for the first time. Oh, my goodness. I mean, that is just mindless prattle between two old people.
The 1-1.
And how are they cooked, Susan?
Oh, I don't know.
The 1-2. Well, you know, Jay Buhner is a weird kind of guy anyway.
Yeah, he was always in that Seinfeld episode.
And the 2-2.
And by the way, those two are just eating snails every day now?
Yeah.
Well, and you know, Susan, we just shared a bowl of snails last night. The 2-1.
It's like, come on. That can't even be real. And yet it is. It is so real. And that's your sound check. Keith is in Seattle listening on CBS Sports Radio's 1090 to educate me on Girl Scout cookies. Keith, what do you got?
Damon, how are you?
I'm good, buddy. How you doing?
Doing well. Can you beam me up?
Yes, sir. So what intel you got for me here?
Well, I got a bunch for you, man. First of all, they quit selling them here a week ago. Last week was the last week to get them here. They're done.
The trade deadline is already passed.
It's passed here. But I'm going to tell you, every year the boxes get a little smaller and the prices get a little more. They were $5.50 a box. And sure enough, man, I can remember, you know, not so long ago that you buy a box of Thin Mints and there's no way you could finish it off. And now for $5, man, you have to get two of them.
A box of Thin Mints is now $5.50 in the greater Seattle area, huh?
It is. And it's much smaller. I think even the actual cookie size is smaller and there's less in there.
Wow,
and
so the Girl Scouts...
The little Girl Scouts are a little more pushy as well. I mean, that's a racket they got going, D.A.
Wow, so this is interesting. So the Girl Scouts of America are squeezing us, huh? God, but I love those Thin Mints.
I bet it's a screw job. The whole thing's a screw job on the American public by these Scouts.
I love the Thin Mints. I love the Tagalongs. Oh, boy, you turn me on to the Tagalongs.
Oh, Tagalongs, put them in the freezer. They're known as peanut butter patties in other parts of the country, but they're awesome.
You turned me on to that 2 springs ago. I was always a straight Thin Mints kind of guy. But then I got the Tagalongs. You said, you got to try the Tagalongs, D.A. Try the Tagalongs. I'm all in on the Tagalongs.
We'll rock your world.
Boy, so they're squeezing us, huh? The Girl Scouts of America. They're like the mafia. Jeez. Watering down our drugs. Costing more than ever before. This is not good. When we come back here on the show, the Cavs take a big gamble.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.